West Legal Aid Center would like to welcome you to the audio program, Whistleblowing in the Corporate World Series, Part 3. Accountants as Whistleblowers, Newly Empowered to Make Ethical Reporting Choices. Thank you for joining our presenters, Eileen Taylor, Professor at Poole College of Management at North Carolina State University, and Jordan Thomas. Jordan is a partner at Labaton Susharo, New York office, and chairs his whistleblower representation practice. Labaton Susharo is one of the country's premier private securities litigation firms and the first law firm in the country to establish a practice exclusively focused on protecting and advocating for SEC whistleblowers. Prior to joining Labaton, Jordan spent more than 15 years in federal law enforcement as both a trial attorney at the Department of Justice and an assistant director in the Enforcement Division of the Securities and Exchange Commission. While at the agency, Jordan played a leadership role in the development of the SEC whistleblower program. Currently, he is also the editor of SECWhistleblowerAdvocate.com, a website dedicated to helping responsible organizations establish a culture of integrity and courageous whistleblowers to report possible securities violations without personal or professional regrets. The program materials are located to the right of your viewer window. Thank you for joining us, and I will now turn things over to our speakers.
Thank you very much, and good morning. I'm very pleased to be joined in this presentation by Professor Taylor. She is one of the thought leaders in the accounting and whistleblower academic world. She has written for the Journal of Business Ethics, Accounting Horizons, Journal of Information Systems, and Accounting Education, among many other publications. Dr. Taylor teaches fraud examination in the MBA program at North Carolina State, and is also the faculty advisor for the team that won the national 2012 AICPA case competition in fraud and forensics. This is our third installment of our webinar series, Whistleblowing in the Corporate World. In our first program, the advent of the SEC Whistleblower Program, we addressed the origin and the basic mechanics of the SEC Whistleblower Program. And in the second program, the Securities Law Primer, we provided an overview of the laws that govern the securities industry. If you miss these programs or any other part in the series, you can always view them on demand at the West Legal Aid Center. Now, to better understand the important role accountants play in protecting investors, our presentation will explore the responsibilities, rights, and risks for accountants in reporting fraud following the enactment of the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act. The importance of accountants coming forward internally or externally cannot be overstated. They can provide their clients and law enforcement authorities with early and invaluable assistance in identifying the scope, participants, victims, and ill-gotten gains associated with corporate wrongdoing. With their help, more ill-gotten gains will be collected, violations detected, and violators stopped earlier. Investors will be protected, and their clients' valuable reputations will be preserved. Let's begin and start on slide 4, the corporate challenge. Next slide. I'd like to share with you some recent survey findings that give a sense of the challenge as well as the future for reporting of violations of the law. In 2009, KPMG conducted an integrity survey, which found that 74% of employees personally observed or had firsthand knowledge of wrongdoing during the previous 12 months. 47% of the respondents didn't believe that they would be protected from retaliation if they reported misconduct. 61% didn't believe they would be satisfied with the outcome if they reported misconduct. And 60% in the banking and finance industry reported that the wrongdoing that they observed could cause a significant loss of public trust if discovered. Littler Mendelsohn, a firm that represents many corporations, conducted a whistleblower survey in November of 2011. In that survey, 96% reported concern about whistleblower claims. 73% reported this as an emerging risk area. 67% predicted that whistleblowing claims would increase. and 65% reported being only moderately prepared. The Ethics Resource Center, a leading think tank on ethics, conducted a national business ethics survey that was released in January 2012. In it, 45% witnessed misconduct at work. 42% reported that their employer had a weak ethical culture, and 22% of employees who reported misconduct perceived retaliation. Next slide. Labaton Susharo, the law firm that I work at, conducted a U.S.-UK financial services industry survey in July of 2012 using an independent polling agency. The survey found that 39% of financial service professionals believed that their competitors had engaged in illegal or unethical conduct. 26% had observed or had firsthand knowledge of misconduct in the workplace. 94% reported wrongdoing, would report wrongdoing given the protections and incentives of the SEC whistleblower program. And 44% said they were aware of the SEC whistleblower program. Another survey conducted by Labaton Susharo, its Ethics in Action survey that was released in September of 2012, found that 54% of Americans had observed or had firsthand knowledge of misconduct in the workplace. 84% had a positive perception of whistleblowers, and 83% would report wrongdoing given the protections and incentives of the SEC whistleblower program. And only 28% of those respondents were aware of the SEC whistleblower program. Now, the takeaways from these surveys, there are several takeaways that can be had from these surveys. The first is that misconduct is more widespread and significant than commonly thought. Another takeaway is that there is and has been a fundamental breakdown in trust between employers and employees that has affected the extent that employees are comfortable reporting misconduct. And finally, most employees are now willing to report misconduct externally, and the number of participants in the SEC whistleblower program is likely to increase as public awareness grows. Next slide. Responsibilities. This is an important topic for us to explore, and Dr. Taylor will be walking folks through the responsibilities of accountants today in reporting misconduct.
Thank you, Jordan. We will start on the public duty slide, slide 8. So accountants, as a learned and licensed profession, accounting primarily serves society rather than just the desires of a few or of a single client. The professional organizations that guide accountants set standards which emphasize accountants as independent from clients and employers and responsible to the integrity of the profession first and foremost. The AICPA Code of Professional Conduct specifically states that CPAs have a duty to the public, which includes not only the company, but also customers, vendors, employees, owners, and the community in general. The Institute of Management Accountants Code of Conduct also speaks to integrity and to accountants' responsibilities to carry out their duties ethically, doing nothing to discredit the profession. State licensing boards have adopted identical or modified versions of the AICPA Code of Professional Conduct, which places the public interest at the forefront. Similar standards exist for tax accountants and other accounting practice areas and organizations. Accountants are often in a unique position to become aware of fraud and other illegal acts. They have the technical competence to recognize fraud, they're trained to be professionally skeptical, and they operate under the codes of professional conduct I just discussed that outline these obligations. As licensed members of a profession, for CPAs, their expertise provides support for any disclosures and reports that they make. We'll switch to the next slide, general responsibilities. Auditors have always had a responsibility to report or require the client to report illegal acts that materially affect the client's financial statements. The Public Company Accounting Oversight Board was created in response to a series of audit failures and is the de facto regulator for accounting firms' audits of public companies. Through generally accepted auditing standards, as well as the PCAOB audit standards. Auditors have guidance for planning audits to detect the fraud and material misstatements that are due to fraud. Above all, auditors must act with integrity. And this comes right from the AICPA Code of Professional Conduct. They should be guided by the precept that when members fulfill their responsibility to the public, clients and employers' interests are best served. Next slide, we'll go through the specific guidelines for reporting when fraud is detected. So starting on slide 10, when an auditing firm discovers fraud or other security violations by an issuer for which they're engaged to provide an opinion on financial statements, they first must inform management and assure the audit committee of the issuer's board of directors is informed of the violations. So they have to inform management and make sure that the audit committee on the board of directors knows about the violations. The second step is to look at whether the violations have a material effect, and this is both qualitatively and quantitatively on the financial statements of the issuer. And the guidance for that is Staff Accounting Bulletin 99. And the importance of that is to look not just quantitatively at material effects, but qualitatively. If there's no material effect, no further action is needed. But if there is a material effect, the auditor has to consider whether management or the board of directors have taken appropriate action, including external reporting of the violations. If they have not, taken action, no further action is required by the audit firm. But if management and the board of directors have not taken action, the auditor must make a formal report and provide it to the board of directors. The board then has one day to notify the SEC of the report and provide a copy of the notice back to the auditor. If the firm receives notice that a copy has been sent to the SEC, there is no further action. However, if the company does not report to the SEC, the auditor must provide a copy to the SEC of the report within one business day and may or may not decide to resign from the engagement. Despite these clear guidelines, throughout the last decade, we've seen few reports of fraud by auditors who often quietly resign rather than report the fraud they've uncovered or force the client to report the fraud. These quiet resignations unfortunately do a disservice to the public interest as they allow the frauds to continue and perpetrators to walk free. I'll now turn it back over to Jordan to discuss accountants' rights under the whistleblower program.
Thank you, Dr. Taylor. On July 21st, we're on slide 14. On July 21st, 2010, Congress enacted the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act, one of the most significant financial reforms efforts since the Great Depression. Among many other things, Dodd-Frank created the Financial Stability Oversight Council to identify risks to United States financial stability that may arise from activities of large, interconnected financial service companies, promote market discipline, and eliminate expectations of government bailouts, and respond to emerging threats to the country's financial stability. It also requires that hedge funds managing over $100 million in assets as an investment advisor register with the SEC. Also, it establishes the SEC whistleblower program for individuals who provide information about possible securities violations. This program offers anonymous reporting, employment protections, and monetary awards. To that end, the SEC's implementing rules for the program became effective on August 12, 2011. Next slide. There are three pillars to the SEC whistleblower program. The first is anonymous reporting. For many, the difficult personal and professional decision to come forward and report wrongdoing requires a reconciliation of conflicting values. On the one hand, our society celebrates team players, and on the other, it has contempt for mindless sheep that go along to get along. At times, our society champions the individual who does what is right. Too often, however, society unfairly characterizes the individual who reports problems as disloyal. In the past, the fear of retaliation or social stigma has deterred some potential whistleblowers from reporting possible violations. As a result, countless investors have been seriously injured. Such fear, whether real or imagined, undermined corporate compliance and integrity programs and the ability of law enforcement authorities to detect and prosecute securities violations. To correct this serious problem and encourage everyone to take a stand against wrongdoing, the SEC Whistleblower Program permits whistleblowers to report possible securities violations anonymously. To anonymously report possible violations of the securities laws to the SEC, a whistleblower is required to be represented by an attorney and must provide his or her counsel with a copy of the submission signed under the penalty of perjury. The attorney will verify the identity of the whistleblower before any information is submitted to the SEC, serve as an intermediary between the SEC and the whistleblower during any investigation and related enforcement action, and advocate for the highest potential monetary award if the submission results in a successful SEC enforcement action and the whistleblower wishes an award. Prior to receiving any monetary award, for eligibility, tax, and other reasons, whistleblowers must disclose their identity to the SEC. After this disclosure, since SEC investigations are confidential and non-public, the agency may only disclose the whistleblower's identity in very limited circumstances. One practical warning for potential whistleblowers is that even if a whistleblower subsequently retains counsel to make an anonymous submission, the SEC may not be able to fully protect the whistleblower's identity if it has already been disclosed to them. Accordingly, the best practice is to not contact the SEC until a whistleblower has decided whether to file anonymously or not. Next slide. The second major pillar of the SEC whistleblower program are employment protections. What employment protections are available to SEC whistleblowers? Section 922 of Dodd-Frank states that no employer may discharge, demote, suspend, threaten, harass, directly or indirectly, or in any other manner discriminate against a whistleblower because of any lawful act done by the whistleblower, including, next slide, and these are the protected conduct, things that people will be protected for doing. First, providing information about possible securities violations to the SEC. Another is participating in any SEC investigation or related enforcement action. And last, making disclosures to the SEC required by law. Next slide. To take advantage of these employment protections, an SEC whistleblower must have a reasonable belief that the information provided to the agency relates to a possible securities law violation that has occurred, is ongoing, or is about to occur. Despite significant incentives to report internally, a whistleblower is not entitled to the employment protections associated with the SEC whistleblower program until he or she reports the information about a possible securities violations to the SEC in accordance with the rules of the program. Accordingly, if retaliation is anticipated, it may be prudent to formally and quickly report possible securities violations to the SEC. That being said, if retaliation occurs before this requirement is met, a whistleblower may still be eligible for other federal and state whistleblower protections. Next slide. If whistleblowers are subjected to retaliation in violation of the law, they have the right to immediately sue their employers in federal court without having to exhaust the administrative process before filing. The types of remedies available to whistleblowers include reinstatement with equivalent seniority, double back pay with interest, attorney's fees, and reimbursement of other litigation-related expenses. These protections exist regardless of whether or not the alleged securities violations are proven or lead to a successful enforcement action. Next slide. Whistleblowers have 6 years from the retaliatory conduct, or 3 years from when the employee knew or reasonably should have known of the retaliatory conduct, to file a claim, if it is not more than 10 years after the violation occurred. This is a dramatic expansion of the 90-day statute of limitations previously provided by the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, and it will provide corporations, it has caused corporations to reconsider some of their employment practices. Next slide. Although federal programs that provide monetary awards for whistleblowers have been around since the Civil War, for the first time, The Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act authorized the payment of monetary awards to individuals who report violations of the federal securities laws. Subject to the eligibility requirements, the Commission is required to pay an award or awards of 10% to 30% of the monetary sanctions collected to one or more whistleblowers who voluntarily provide the information to the SEC with original information that leads to a successful enforcement action by the Commission in a federal court or administrative action in which the SEC obtains monetary sanctions totaling more than $1 million. The SEC will also pay an award based upon amounts collected in certain related actions. Let's walk through this slide. Monetary sanctions can include disgorgement, penalties, interest, any sort of sanction involving money. The voluntary provided prong simply means that they were not the whistleblower was not obligated to provide the information prior to the submission. Original information is something that can be is something that can either be based on personal knowledge, like you're an insider in an organization and you learn about misconduct, or it can be based on independent analysis, where your information is based upon the analysis of publicly available information. A good example of the latter would be Mr. Markopoulos, who reported misconduct associated with the Madoff case, even though he was not an insider in the Madoff operation. The leads to a successful enforcement action can be done in two ways. One is where the information causes the SEC to open a new investigation or open a new aspect of an ongoing investigation or examination. The other scenario is there is an ongoing investigation, but the whistleblower is able to provide significant information that contributes to the success of the enforcement action. Now, discussion relating to related actions, there are several cases where the SEC will have an action, the Department of Justice, or another federal agency will also have a related action. And if those related actions came about because of the tip of a whistleblower, the whistleblower would be entitled to 10 to 30% of the monetary sanctions associated with those tips if the SEC's monetary sanctions exceed $1 million. Next slide. There are some individuals that are not eligible to participate in the SEC whistleblower program. Individuals criminally convicted for related misconduct, members, officers, and employees of the SEC and other enumerated organizations, family members and those that reside with an SEC member or employee, members, officers, and employees of a foreign government, and individuals that knowingly or willfully provide false information to the SEC. Next slide. Similarly, there are certain classes of people, like attorneys, accountants, officers, directors, trustees, and partners, employees or contractors whose duties involve compliance or internal audit, individuals retained to conduct an internal investigation involving possible violations, and individuals who obtain information about violations from an ineligible individual. These individuals are not immediately eligible for financial awards. However, it's important to note that virtually everyone, including those who of you participating in this call, can be a whistleblower under certain circumstances. The circumstances in which an accountant is eligible for a monetary award will be discussed later in detail. The most common exceptions for the types of individuals listed on this slide are to prevent the relevant entity from engaging in conduct that is likely to cause substantial injury to the financial interest or property of the entity or investors. The relevant entity is engaging in conduct that will impede an government investigation of misconduct, or at least 120 days have elapsed since the whistleblower reported the information informally. That being said, since the eligibility rules for monetary awards can be complicated and the facts and circumstances of each case are unique, potential whistleblowers in the categories listed on this slide are encouraged to consult with a lawyer, use the eligibility calculator that can be found on SECWhistleblowerAdvocate.com or carefully review the SEC rules. Next slide. The criteria for the SEC to determine the amount of a whistleblower award in a successful action are as follows. Factors that may increase an award include the significance of the information provided by the whistleblower, the degree of assistance provided by the whistleblower, the law enforcement interest in making the award, and participation in internal compliance systems. This latter factor is an incentive for whistleblowers within an organization to report matters internally first, if safe. Factors that may decrease an award include culpability or involvement in the reported misconduct, unreasonable reporting delays, and interference with internal compliance systems. Again, the SEC is attempting to incentivize people to report internally. So if someone were to interfere with the internal compliance and reporting systems, that would be something the commission would probably reduce a potential award. Next slide. Let's talk about some of the common questions that accountant whistleblowers and whistleblowers generally have. Next slide. The first question are, what are the risks associated with reporting violations of the federal securities laws? Next slide. Being a whistleblower isn't always easy, glamorous, or lucrative, despite what you see on TV. Historically, reporting violations of the law has meant significant personal and professional risks for whistleblowers. Fortunately, things are changing for the better. This is in part due to the growing frustration with recent corporate scandals and bailouts. As evidence of this, there's a positive public sentiment. In a recent survey that we talked about earlier in the program, 84% of Americans have a positive perception of whistleblowers. More than 80% of Americans and 90% of financial service professionals would report misconduct if they had the protections and incentives offered by the SEC whistleblower program. Much of the positive feelings here were based on new legislative initiatives, enhanced whistleblower protections and incentives, new channels for anonymous whistleblowing, and requirements for more rigorous internal reporting and compliance policies, procedures, and practices. Next slide. Another common question is, what are the most common types of securities law violations? On this slide, you will see some common categories of securities violations. This list is not exhaustive, but represents the type of cases most often investigated and prosecuted by the Securities and Exchange Commission. Let's walk through each of the types of violations. First, market manipulation. Market manipulation is the interference with the free and fair operation of the market by engaging in transactions and other practices that create or maintain an artificial price for security. This slide has some examples, and some of the future slides will have examples. I'm not going to go into them today, but they're available for you to look at and to determine whether they may be relevant to your situation. The second common type of securities violations are offering fraud cases. Offering frauds involve making material misrepresentations and or omissions to potential investors in connection with an offering of securities. We often see unregistered offerings, Ponzi schemes in this area. Next slide, financial fraud. Financial fraud occurs when a public company files materially false or misleading financial statements with the SEC. This is an area that accountants are likely to have the most awareness of. It may involve misleading disclosures, misclassifications of the financial statements, improper recording of transactions, overstatements, and understatements. Next slide. Insider trading. Insider trading is the buying or selling of a corporate security while in possession of material information about that corporation that is not known to the public. Next slide. trading and pricing violations. Trading and pricing violations involve any number of trading techniques that are illegal under the securities laws. Next slide. Foreign Corrupt Practices Act violations. These are cases that often involve bribery. The FCPA prohibits the offer, payment, or promise to pay money or anything of value, i.e. the bribe, to any foreign official in an effort to win or retain business from that foreign official's government. It's important to remember that many governments also operate businesses, and so bribes that are paid to what seems like private businesses may in fact be a government-run business. This is not uncommon in China and many other countries. Next slide, municipal securities fraud. Municipal securities fraud occurs when materially false or misleading statements are made to investors in connection with the purchase or sale of debt securities issued by state and local governments in the United States. Next slide. Who is eligible to be an SEC whistleblower? Any individual, regardless of their nationality, who alone or jointly with others provides information to the SEC relating to a possible violation of the securities laws that has occurred, is ongoing, or is about to occur. Only individuals, not companies, are eligible for the whistleblower protections and incentives in Dodd-Frank. Now, one thing it's important to pay attention to is that the requirements to be a to report anonymously is that you have an attorney. That's it. If you want to, the employment protections, the requirement is that you file in accordance with the rules of the SEC whistleblower program and that you, in good faith, provide information to the SEC. All the other requirements that we have talked about or will talk about in this program relate to monetary awards. Next slide. When is an accountant eligible for a monetary award under the SEC whistleblower program? One second. All right, we're now on slide 40. Now, again, accountants are eligible to report anonymously in the employment protections without consideration of what I'm about to cover. Accountants' eligibility for monetary awards, this flow chart will help to explain when accountants are eligible. The first decision question is, do you have a reasonable basis to believe that either the disclosure of information is necessary to prevent substantial injury to the entity or the investing public, or the entity's conduct will impede an investigation of the misconduct? If your answer is yes, you may report the violation to the SEC immediately. If your answer is no, you have to ask the question, are you engaged in an audit or public company's financial statement? Moving to the next slide. So if your answer was yes, you're engaged in an audit of a public company's financial statement, then you should ask the question, has your firm reported the violation in accordance with the reporting requirements of Section 10A, which Professor Taylor discussed earlier in this program? If you determine that yes, your company has, then you should ask the question, has the firm otherwise committed any violations of the securities laws? If yes, you can report the violation to the SEC. If no, no further action appears to be warranted. If the answer to the question of did the firm appropriately report in accordance with Section 10A a potential violation of the securities law, you can report, and you said no, you can report the firm's violation of Section 10A to the SEC, and if the SEC were to investigate the matter and determine that there was a violation by the client of the auditing firm, that would also be considered part of the monetary award consideration. Now, let's now shift to the next slide, which focuses on if you were to answer no to the question of whether you're engaged in an audit of a public company's financial statements. If your answer is no, then you should ask yourself, is your representation or engagement required by the securities laws, but other than an audit of a public company's financial statements? Next slide. And we're now on 43. Begin with, if your answer is no, you're not engaged in the audit of a public company's financial statements. If your answer is no, are you representing an audit client of your firm, but your engagement is in non-audit capacity? If that's the case, you can report the violation to the SEC. If your answer to the question is no again, and your answer is, are you an employee of the entity committing the violation and your duties involve compliance and internal audit? If your answer is no, again, you can report the violation to the SEC. If the answer is yes, then you can report to the SEC, but only if one of the exceptions exists. Whether you report, if you reported the information to the audit committee, a chief legal or compliance officer, or your supervisor more than 120 days ago. Now, let's go to and the next slide. Here, we have two scenarios. One is if you reported the information to the entity's audit committee, chief legal or compliance officer or supervisor, and more than 120 days have elapsed, you would be eligible to report to the SEC. If you had not, you would then have to wait until that time elapsed or one of the steps had been followed. Next slide. Another common question is, will I lose my license if I report a possible securities violation to the SEC? And for this question, I've asked Dr. Taylor to address this question.
Thank you, Jordan. The license that we're referring to here is a CPA license. CPAs are licensed by the individual states and are governed by those individual state rules. The particular rule that comes into question here is accountant-client confidentiality, or the requirement that accountants maintain confidentiality of client information. This area has always been an important component of accountants' relationships with clients. The accounting codes of professional conduct specifically address confidentiality of client information. For example, the AICPA Code of Professional Conduct, Section 301, and the IMA Code state that accountants should not release confidential information without client consent unless authorized or legally required to do so. The Institute of Internal Auditors has a similar requirement limiting disclosure unless legally or professionally required. The individual state rules and regulations are enforced by the state boards of accountancy and generally take similar views to client confidentiality rules. There's a good reason for clients to expect and for accountants to maintain confidentiality of client information. For example, clients need to trust that accountants will not share proprietary information with competitors. The trust between accountants and their clients allows accountants to have full access to all of the information they need to help the client make the best judgments and decisions within the law. However, this confidentiality shield does not apply to acts that violate the law. We turn to the next slide. We're going to be looking at the state confidentiality rules, map of the U.S. This map shows the confidentiality rules and allowed exceptions to those rules by state. You can see that many states have adopted the AICPA Code of Professional Conduct rules, which allows accountants to share confidential client information if they are reporting illegal acts or if they are complying with legal investigations, subpoenas, or the law itself. If you have a question about your particular state's regulations, I would direct you to see the individual state guidelines, which are available online at most states' websites. Go back to Jordan for a discussion of preemption of these laws.
Thank you, Dr. Taylor. Even if reporting to the SEC violated an accountant's whistleblower's duty of confidentiality, Dodd-Frank and the SEC's implementing rules would preempt any conflicting state confidentiality rules. Under the law of federal preemption, a law or regulation enacted by the federal government preempts conflicting state law. Generally, state action is preempted by federal law and must be invalidated when it stands as an obstacle to the accomplishment and execution of the full purposes and objectives of Congress. Federal regulations that have been duly promulgated by a federal agency pursuant to a valid congressional delegation have the same preemptive effect as federal statutes. In this case, Section 922 of Dodd-Frank clearly and unequivocally manifests Congress's objective to permit and encourage whistleblowing by accountants, albeit in limited circumstances. Indeed, the legislation lists several classes of persons who are excluded from participation, but does not include accountants. In addition, the SEC implementing rules expressly permit accountant whistleblowers to fully participate in the program. Accordingly, any state disciplinary rule that would subject an otherwise qualifying accountant whistleblower to potential disciplinary action would be preempted by Dodd-Frank and invalid. In other words, even if a CPA state board forbade release of confidential client information, the federal law would take precedence over the state restriction, removing the risk of license loss over confidentiality violations. Next slide. What constitutes a security? For some, it may not be something that they're familiar with. So let's walk through that. The SEC whistleblower program is limited to whistleblowers who report a possible violation of the federal securities laws that has occurred, is ongoing, or is about to occur. Accordingly, a key issue when considering whether a particular financial instrument or transaction is covered by the securities laws is the meaning of the term security. For non-lawyers, beyond traditional stocks and bonds, I think you will find the definition of a security to be quite broad. Under Section 2A1 of the Securities Act of 1933, a security is defined to include, among other things, and we should be on slide 49, any note, stock, treasury stock, securities future, security-based swap, bond, debenture, evidence of indebtedness, a certificate of interest or participation in any profit-sharing agreement, collateral trust certificate, pre-organization certificate, or subscription, transferable share, investment contract, voting trust certificate, certificate of deposit for security, a fractional undivided interest in oil, gas, or other mineral rights, any put, call, straddle, option, or privilege on any security, certificate of deposit, or group or index of securities would also be true. Similar definitions of security can be found in other federal security statutes, including Section 3A10 of the Securities and Exchange Act of 1934. Next slide. Most of the instruments listed in the Securities Act definition of security are straightforward. However, in some cases, it's not so clear, particularly when determining what constitutes an investment contract. In the Supreme Court case SEC v. Howey, the Supreme Court held that an investment contract is a security if it has four basic elements: an investment of money, a common enterprise, expectation of profit, and solely from the efforts of others. For those of you who are not lawyers and are not sure about whether potential misconduct involves a security, I encourage you to consult SECWhistlebloweradvocate.com, review SEC law or guidance, or consult with an attorney. Next slide. What is the international reach of the U.S. securities laws? Next slide. The economy is global, and so is securities fraud. The SEC whistleblower program recognizes that the financial markets are boundless. Accordingly, possible securities violations that occur anywhere in the world are eligible for the program. Potential international violators can be individuals or organizations, public or private. Similarly, a whistleblower can be anyone, regardless of citizenship. According to the 2011 annual report of the SEC whistleblower program, which reported on program activity for the 7-week period between the effective date of the program's implementing rules and the close of the agency's last fiscal year, nearly 10% of the tips came from foreign jurisdictions, including the United Kingdom, Australia, China, Canada, Italy, Norway, Serbia, Spain, the Netherlands, Turkey, and Uruguay. This is particularly significant given the fact the program has not been widely advertised or reported on abroad. So if you are a senior officer at an international bank, hedge fund, or investment advisor, or you're an accountant for one of these organizations, does the long arm of U.S. financial regulators and law enforcement authorities reach you in your organization? Probably. As you may know, Dodd-Frank obliterated many of the exemptions for investment advisors and non-U.S. entities to avoid SEC regulation. While each case is different, here are a few basic ways to determine whether your organization may be subject to U.S. jurisdiction. If you have U.S. clients, U.S. investors, U.S. investments, U.S. operations, or U.S. employees, your organization may be subject to SEC jurisdiction. Simplifying a complex issue even further, if entities use the U.S. mail in connection with regular business activities, they may want to consult with counsel to understand their potential legal exposure to U.S. laws. Next slide. What is the statute of limitations for bringing an SEC enforcement action? The statute of limitations for SEC enforcement actions is set forth in 28 U.S.C. 2462. Which is a catch-all statute of limitations for actions brought by the federal agencies in federal court. Next slide. Under Section 2462, the SEC has 5 years to bring an enforcement action seeking civil penalties from the date that the claim first accrued. Please note, this statute only bars civil penalties. All other types of remedies remain available after the 5-year statute of limitations. That being said, the older a case is, the less likely the SEC will choose to use its limited resources to investigate, prosecute possible securities violations. Next slide. Under certain circumstances, there are ways to toll or stop the statute of limitations. This slide discusses the two primary ones. One is the discovery rule. This rule holds that the statute of limitations for a fraud claim does not accrue until the fraud is discovered or could have been discovered with reasonable diligence by the plaintiff, in this case, the Securities and Exchange Commission. Another common theory for stopping the statute of limitations is fraudulent concealment or equitable tolling. Under this theory, it temporarily suspends the statute of limitations clock, even though a claim has already accrued, if the defendant took affirmative steps to conceal the wrongful conduct from the plaintiff, or in this case, the SEC. Next slide. Well, one moment. Let's check to see if we have any questions. Professor Taylor, are you seeing any questions? I'm having some issues with my computer here.
No, I'm not seeing any right now.
Okay. Well, we invite you to submit your questions, and we will continue with the slide presentation. We are on slide 56. What steps can my organization take to deter and detect securities violations? Next slide. Although this topic warrants a lengthier discussion, in response to the whistleblower provisions in Dodd-Frank, here are 5 things that every responsible organization should consider. First, invest in compliance. Resist the temptation to cut compliance programs during these difficult financial times. The best way to ensure that possible violations are reported internally and addressed appropriately is to regularly review and strengthen these important programs. due to the increased probability of detection and the negative collateral consequences. Sophisticated legal and compliance professionals will leverage this new reality to secure support for establishing state-of-the-art compliance programs. Second, have a game plan. Be prepared to respond to internal reports of misconduct and regulatory inquiries with internal and external resources. Third, self-report. Don't wait to report violations of the securities laws until your investigation is complete. Know all the facts or are confronted by a regulator. Timely self-reporting is appreciated by the SEC and other law enforcement authorities and will be rewarded. Fourth, communicate more. Too often, companies fail to provide employees any information about how their concerns were handled. This practice undermines employees' confidence in their compliance programs and may lead to unnecessary SEC whistleblower submissions. Lastly, and perhaps most importantly, though it might sound a bit fluffy, establish a culture of integrity. Based upon my experience at the SEC, this is what is often missing in organizations with significant securities violations. Despite this fact, too many organizations ignore this fundamental error and solely focus their energies and resources on the latest compliance trends. Many compliance programs, well thought, well wrought, and expensive as they may be, only address half the question. They focus solely on the mechanics of compliance and the practical response to misconduct. The more important and preemptory issue, creating a broad and powerful ethical culture, is absent from the calculation. Without a robust ethical paradigm woven into corporate culture, compliance is a post facto and tactical exercise. In the post-Dodd-Frank environment, the stakes are simply too high for such tactics. Organizations need ethical strategists. As evidence of this, consider the long list of distinguished companies that have been the subject of significant SEC enforcement actions. It has been my experience that most of these organizations have had the necessary resources to establish state-of-the-art compliance programs. Many of these organizations had adequate compliance programs with vigilant corporate compliance officers. However, during the relevant time, what many of these organizations lacked was a strong ethical culture. Next slide. What should every potential accountant whistleblower know? Next slide. Based upon my experience at the SEC and work as an SEC whistleblower advocate at Labaton Cesharo and Dr. Taylor's observations, here are five tips that every prospective SEC whistleblower who's an accountant should consider. First, try to address the problem internally first. As a preliminary matter, in most cases, potential accountant whistleblowers should report possible securities violations to their employers or clients in accordance with relevant rules and regulations. After all, compliance with federal securities laws is promoted when accountants and entities work together to uncover wrongdoing and ensure that those responsible are held accountable. That being said, the accountant's duties are to the public and to investors and should not be sacrificed in order to comply with non-binding professional conduct standards. Second, know the odds. The SEC receives about 30,000 tips a year. These tips are reviewed by the Office of Market Intelligence for apparent reliability, detail, and potential violations of the federal securities laws. The professional staff in that office determines whether each tip should be forwarded to an investigative team or referred to another law enforcement or regulatory organization. The most promising tips are assigned to an investigative staff who conduct a more detailed review and determine whether the alleged misconduct warrants investigation. Only 349 tips led to investigations in fiscal year 2011. Only a fraction of these will lead to an SEC enforcement action. An even smaller percentage of those enforcement actions will result in monetary sanctions in excess of $1 million threshold required for monetary award under the SEC whistleblower program. This means that the quality of your submission to the SEC is critically important unless you're feeling lucky. Third, attempt to identify violations. When assessing tips, the SEC looks for possible securities violations and corroboration. So you should attempt to determine which violations of the federal securities laws may have occurred. If you're unfamiliar with the securities laws, one way to identify possible securities violations is to go to the SEC website and look for prior enforcement actions that involve similar misconduct. With this information, you should attempt to gather the necessary evidence to satisfy each element of the violation and highlight this evidence in your whistleblower submission. The SEC is likely to give the greatest weight to evidence that suggests that the alleged violator is knowingly or recklessly engaged in the misconduct. That said, don't be discouraged if you don't have evidence relating to every element of a particular violation. This is common, particularly in the early stages of the case. Just do your best to assemble all potentially relevant evidence. This approach will ensure that you make a complete and compelling whistleblower submission. Fourth, legally collect evidence. Prior to making an SEC whistleblower submission, without violating the law, you should attempt to collect all available documentary and testimonial evidence that helps to establish the possible securities violations. This evidence should be provided to the SEC along with your initial submission. The more corroborating evidence that you have, the more likely the SEC will initiate an investigation and that your investigation will lead to a successful enforcement action. However, you are strongly encouraged to consult with an attorney about how to legally collect evidence, especially if you're considering taping conversations or removing documents from your workplace. Finally, report anonymously. For accountant whistleblowers who fear retaliation by their employers or clients, it may make sense to report possible securities violations anonymously to the SEC with the assistance of counsel. Next slide. Where can potential whistleblowers and other interested parties learn more about the securities laws and the SEC enforcement process? Next slide. If you would like more information about the SEC Whistleblower Program, I encourage you to visit secwhistlebloweradvocate.com. This innovative website uses videos, searchable databases, eligibility calculators, comprehensive legal primers, thought leadership collections, and timely blog entries to help responsible organizations to establish a culture of integrity and courageous whistleblowers to report possible securities violations. Next slide. This concludes the formal presentation. Please feel free to reach out to us directly and encourage you to plug into the other webinars in the Whistleblowing in the Corporate World series, which will examine other aspects of corporate whistleblowing and its implications in various segments of the commercial marketplace. The next three whistleblower programs will be corporate lawyers as whistleblowers. The next one is Insider's Guide to the SEC Enforcement Process. The next program after that will be corporate lawyers as whistleblowers. And the final one is Whistleblowing in the Corporate Insider. We thank you for your participation, and at this time, we again welcome your questions. Professor Taylor, if you see any questions, please, if you could let me know.
I don't see any right now. Thank you.
Okay. We'll give it a minute. If we don't hear anything, we wish everyone well, and thank you for participating in this webinar.
Thank you for selecting West Legal Ed Center. For optimal savings, why not consider a customized subscription? You'll get unlimited access to the largest, most current CLE library offered online. Call 1-866-765-MCLE for more information on how to maximize this opportunity. That's 1-866-765-MCLE for continuing education that's always comprehensive, always relevant, always current.